Hi, I'm Cassie McCullough and welcome to The List, RN's weekly popular culture show. Blink and you miss it. It's like same-sex marriage in the ACT.
And I'm Jason DeRosso. And this week, we're taking stock of the best, the worst and the memorable moments on television. The dramas, the comedies, the reality shows and the panels.
2013 was notable for its hits and its misses. A number of shows sank without trace, while others set new benchmarks and reinvented the way we tell our stories.
There's been a revolution in small screen drama and comedy. Some Australian producers have gotten the memo, others maybe haven't yet.
That's coming up on The List.
Yes, well, to that forensic dissection of the year in television in just a moment. But first to the furore around the so-called Obama funeral selfie this week.
Yeah, this is being called the biggest funeral selfie of all time. Obama, the Prime Minister of the UK, David Cameron, and the Prime Minister of Denmark, Ella Thorning-Schmidt, taking a photo of themselves with Michelle Obama in the background looking nonplussed.
Yeah, pretty unimpressed, I must say. Well, you know, it was, after all, Nelson Mandela's memorial. I mean, it was a huge event.
It should be said that the photographer who took the big photo that's been reproduced around the world says that it was out of context. And in fact, Michelle Obama was kind of laughing and interacting with the others just before he took it. So who knows?
But as we've discussed on this show before, we've discussed selfies at funerals. There's a Tumblr site with a whole heap of them. People are commemorating loss and grief in all sorts of new and interesting ways online now.
And this is being reflected in figures that Twitter released this week about the most shared tweets of the year. And it turns out that the number one tweet was the one sent by the Glee actress Lea Michele after the death of her co-star and boyfriend, Corey Monteith.
And the second most retweeted tweet happened just earlier in the month. It was a tweet released by the official account of Paul Walker, the actor who was made famous in the Fast and the Furious series of films, confirming his death in that horrific car accident. So there you go.
Yeah, but it's not all doom and gloom, because the third most retweeted tweet was one by Niall Horan. Now, he's from One Direction. He's the one that Will Anderson particularly likes. He tweeted, "Yes, I'm 20. Woohoo! No more teens."
Yes, not all doom and gloom or anything of any depth either. But speaking of teen stars.
Yes, one of our favourites is back. Rebecca Black, who shot to fame 2 years ago with her song Friday, has a new song.
Yes, which is called Saturday.
This Saturday we gon' party all night. One we will remember for the rest of our lives. This Saturday we gon' do it bigger than we ever have before. Out on this Saturday to end.
Yep, the video was released last Saturday and it contains all these references to her previous song, Friday, and there are references to that song in the lyrics of Saturday.
She's
as
saying
well.
It's 2 p.m. on Saturday, she's waking up and thank God Friday's over.
Yes, it wasn't a great experience for her. She became the most hated person on the internet.
Yeah, but I actually think there was something in Friday that people were subliminally picking up. It's got quite a lot of existential angst in it.
All right, well, you've got to prove this to me, Cassie. Okay, let's hear a bit of the original.
It's the beginning of Friday. Friday.
7 a.m. waking up in the morning, gotta be fresh, gotta go downstairs, gotta have my bowl, gotta have cereal, seeing everything, the time is cold.
Okay, so she's, you know.
That's pretty inane there. I don't know where you're going with this. Go on.
But it's that sort of frustration at the superficiality of life. I've got to get up. Okay, so here's one of the spoofs that was done at the time. It's someone impersonating Bob Dylan, and somehow the profundity of the lyrics starts to seep through when you hear Dylan do it.
7 a.m. waking up in the morning. Gotta be fresh. Gotta go downstairs.
Anyway, I'm not going to win this argument. I can see that. All I'm saying is look forward to Sunday.
On RN, you're listening to The List. My name is Jason DeRosso and with me is co-host Cassie McCullough.
And now to a look back in the year in television, the highs, the lows, the memorable moments. With us is Andrew Mercado, the Australian television historian. He's a media commentator and a co-host on the Foxtel movie show and also the author of Super Aussie Soaps. He knows far more about Australian television history than he's polite. Welcome to the show, Andrew.
Thank you so much.
And also joining us from Melbourne is Byron Bache. He's a TV critic for Crikey and a theatre critic for the Herald Sun, and he's made it into the studio despite a flat tyre. Hi, Byron.
Hi, Byron. Well done.
Hi.
All right. Well, look, it's hard to know where to start. It's been a massive year. Lots of different shows coming and going, some faster than others, some coming to stay. Just for a broad picture, Andrew Mercado, do you think that we come to the end of 2013 in better shape than the beginning?
That's a good question because, I mean, one thing, the trend for me with 2013 is that we've seen yet again that reality TV is absolutely still as big as ever. It's not going anywhere. It's cheap to make and it rates, and it's that one thing that people need to watch live so they can talk about at work the next day. I think we're seeing now that dramas are shows that people are taping and watching later. And I think the 2013, maybe this is a good thing, but we've had a few years now where we've had some fantastic Australian dramas and they've all been working, they've all been rating, they've all been critical hits. But I think in 2013, several of them sort of hit speed bumps. So maybe it's time to kind of look at what we're doing and think really clearly about what we're spending our money on local drama-wise.
To you, Byron, do you think it's been a good year for Australian television?
I think it's been a fairly average year for Australian TV. I mean, reality TV is going great guns, like Andrew said, but most of the new dramas and comedies this year haven't really impressed me. There's nothing remarkable, really, I don't think.
Do you think, really, we're being shown up by so much great content coming from overseas then? Is that really the case, that an Australian, you know, local producers just haven't caught up to where TV's going, TV drama especially?
Absolutely. And the thing I've said on this show before and I always harp on about is that Australian television seems to be written by people who don't really watch television. Or if they do, there's a disconnect. So these people are going home and loving Breaking Bad, but then they're writing Packed to the Rafters. And, I mean, obviously they're really different animals, but, you know, there's no kind of... There's nothing high concept, there's nothing exciting going on in Australian television like there is in all of the premium cable dramas that we see imported from overseas.
I definitely agree. It's incredibly hard to compete with those edgy American cable dramas. And I agree with Byron that we're not doing edgy here at all. I think free-to-air network dramas, by their very, you know, means, that they try and go for the biggest audience possible. And I think what we've seen with American cable dramas is that they're quite happy to go for a niche audience. I think a lot of the problems with our dramas is that they're sometimes being a little bit too nice. And I think I probably would use the example of Wonderland, the TV show, which is a show that's...
I've forgotten about Wonderland.
You know, that's a show that should be dirty and a show that should be edgy and should be about young Australians today and not trying to be an Australian version of Friends, which ends up being a show about nothing.
I do remember seeing a comment saying the most remarkable thing about Wonderland was they had found so many white middle-class Australians to be in it.
But there are some interesting things on the fringes of Australian TV, though, right? Especially with these second sort of channels, ABC2 sort of series and so forth, Byron. I think you were kind of impressed by a couple of things you saw out on the fringes.
Look, there are. One of the best kind of almost high-concept shows that I saw this year was actually something on ABC3 that was aimed at kids called Nowhere Boys, a new series that I think is kind of midway through its first season at the moment, about a group of teenage boys who go out on a school trek in the bush and come back and nobody remembers who they are. It's a great concept and it's really well executed, but it's hiding on ABC3 at, you know, 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and it could play in prime time.
All right, well, let's get to some of the really big dramas of the year. Let's start perhaps with Red Fern Now, which is in its second season. Why don't we just hear a scene from the final episode of the second series. Ernie Dingo's in this one. He plays a Viet vet who's got some kind of throat cancer. He turns up at his daughter's house in Red Fern. She's 8 months pregnant, but on her own. The guy's not in the picture. Ernie's arrival has sparked a chain of events which has led to tension on the street. Now, in this scene, and I must say there is some language coming up, he's growling at the neighbour's dog when the neighbour comes out through the front door.
What the frick are you doing? Get back inside the house, you old prick.
Free country.
I said, get inside.
Make me.
How old are you? 2.
Get inside, you prick.
Get inside with your sister, Jake.
Can't control your dog. Can't control your boy.
Get inside. Next time I'm coming over, I don't care how old you are.
I make promises you can't keep.
Look, brilliant stuff. Look, Redfern Now was the best drama, Aussie drama of 2013 for me. I thought it was the best drama of 2012. I think it's a show that we could send around the world and it would play anywhere because Jimmy McGovern, the writer of Cracker, he has been down here working with this Indigenous television unit at the ABC for years. And he's been working with them saying it's all about the story. And they nail this. I mean, that episode with Ernie Dingo, which episode six, the last episode, you know, it takes a tiny little incident of a dog that barks at night and the ripples and the ramifications and the way that the story comes out of that tiny incident. I just thought it was fantastic stuff. And to me, it's one of the great tragedies of the year that it didn't rate that well on TV and that twice as many people were watching a piece of fake rubbish called Beauty and the Geek. Yeah. You know, it's just like, hello, what were people thinking? This is a show you need to track down on DVD and watch this Christmas when there's nothing else on.
What about you, Byron Bates? What did you make of Redfern Now Series 2?
I absolutely agree with Andrew. I think it's one of the best Australian dramas we've ever made. It may even be the best, and it is totally down to Jimmy McGovern's influence. It's one of the only Australian dramas that's actually doing story instead of circumstance, and I think even something as superlative as The Slap last year, which everybody loved, still struggled to actually kind of work through story. It was very much circumstance. And Redfern Now kind of locates the extraordinary in the ordinary, which is something I think very little Australian television manages to do at all.
Byron, I just want to pick you up on something. You're saying that Jimmy McGovern's influence is the most important thing here. I just think some of the acting was extraordinary. And I think the influence of people like Wayne Blair coming from that theatre background, you can see this is really well-crafted drama.
But one of the disappointing things for me there is that Redfern Now shows us that we've got a wealth of Indigenous acting talent, and yet I'm yet to see some of those new actors that we saw there make their way into other Australian TV dramas. Every Australian TV drama is still featuring Deborah Mailman, but it's taken over a year for one of the stars of Redfern Now Series 1, Miranda Tapsell, to get a regular role in a new Australian drama. Because if you look at the promo for Love Child coming next year on Channel 9, there she is in this new 1960s set drama about single mothers in King's Cross. And I was like, finally, you know, to me, there was a bunch of people. If I was working in Home and Away and Neighbours, I'd be looking at the cast of Redfern Now and saying, great, here's a chance for us to maybe get some Indigenous characters into these shows and bring in some amazing actors.
Byron Bash.
It's a fair enough point too. I think that, you know, we're so enamoured of our Brooke Satchwells and our Hugh Sheridans when there's actually a wealth of acting talent, Indigenous and non-Indigenous Australians out there who are working in the theatre, in small independent theatres, who are not working on television, who are far more talented than the people we see in every single show.
And we have interesting how well the Americans do this. I mean, Americans do diversity on screen, small screen and big screen so well these days.
Okay, we've raised the spectre of comparisons between Australian and American dramas. What better time to remember something from earlier this year, the remake of Prisoner? And I must say there is a language warning in this too. It's Jax Holt, being played by Chris McQuaid, former Top Dog. She's returning from solitary confinement to reclaim her position from a younger interloper, the sexually aggressive Frankie Doyle, played by Nicole De Silva. And if there's little ears around, hands over them.
I've had a long time to think about our reunion. Been looking forward to it. Your time's over, Clitty Licker. We're coming to get you.
Okay, so Andrew McCarter, first with you. Is this a kind of high camp take on the old Prisoner?
No. I mean, Prisoner was viewed as high camp when it screened in England years and years later, and we didn't really think it was that when we made it. But look, I thought this was an incredible piece of drama because it took a beloved Australian TV show, and in remaking it, they did a lot of, it wasn't just a straight remake. First of all, it was set in 2013 and not 1979. The second thing was it was a prequel. It didn't start where the original show started. It started before that with the arrival of Bea Smith into Wentworth and follows her journey to become Top Dog. But then it took it a step further. It took all of those original characters that we think we recognise and know and often flipped them 180 degrees. So instead of Vera Bennett being a nasty screw, She's a nice screw. It's a prequel. It's before she's turned nasty. I just think that, you know, to really remake something and keep all the original Prisoner fans happy and they love this new show, but to keep them guessing that they think they know what's going to happen, but it's a completely different thing. It's an alternate universe. It's another timeline. Fantastic for me. Great drama.
Well, it has been a success. Foxtel were very happy with it. They say it's the most watched Australian drama series premiere in Foxtel history. But, you know, extremely popular. We know that a second series has been commissioned. But Byron Bash, you weren't a fan of Wentworth. And in fact, you compared it to Orange is the New Black, saying, where Wentworth has puppet bitches with cardboard axes to grind, Orange is the New Black has flawed, difficult and dazzlingly real women.
Yeah, and I think it's that thing that we were talking about with Red Fern Now, where it's locating the extraordinary in the ordinary. Wentworth is about stabbings and people twisting each other's nipples and calling each other bitches and graphic lesbian sex. And there's no real people in that show. There are some great acting performances. The cast is stellar, but the writing is kind of mediocre because it doesn't really have a voice. It has a tone, but it doesn't have a voice. And it doesn't have that thing that Red Fern Now has, or that Orange is the New Black has, which says, you know, it's almost like reading a fantastic piece of prose, a novel, where it has this consistent kind of overarching voice and you go, right, I'm in the hands of somebody who knows what they're doing.
Byron, one of your favourites this year, though, is Please Like Me. Now, this is an interesting series made by and starring the comedian Josh Thomas. It's got a lot of fans. Why do you describe it as transcendentally good TV?
I just think it's about voice. That's the thing that I'm going to keep harping on about. This is Josh Thomas's voice on the screen, and he's an interesting guy. He's incredibly charming. He's very funny. And it's something really honest. It's real people being kind of raw on the screen. You know, it's a show where he plays a character called Josh, who gets dumped by his girlfriend in the first episode because she thinks he's gay. He doesn't really know that he's gay. And then his mother tries to commit suicide. And this is a comedy, you know, but it's got this incredible kind of story through line and all of these setups in the first episode that drive the action for six episodes afterwards.
And I guess the comment that I would make about it is, you know, thank God that the ABC are actually making Australian comedy, because, you know, whenever those critics of the ABC get on their high horse, I just think, why don't you just shut up? You know, I don't see Channel 7, 9 or 10, you know, trying to find new Australian talent and saying, let's make a sitcom like Please Like Me or Upper Middle Bogan, you know, or all the other shows that they've done this year. It's a Date, Peter Hellyer. They take chances with new people, and that's how we actually find comedy gold. And the free-to-air commercial networks are doing nothing in the area of comedy. So thank God for the ABC. And I suppose we should mention Jamay, Private Schoolgirl, even though for me that was one of the huge disappointments of the year. I thought Chris Lilley really got it wrong by concentrating on the one racist, homophobic, nasty character with no point or character development. And I just thought that that was a show that went nowhere.
One punchline, Byron Bash?
Absolutely. I would be very happy to never spend any time with Jamay ever again.
All right. Well, what about one of the most popular dramas of the year, I guess, well, over the last 3 or 4 years, and that is Offspring, which had a major moment in it this year.
Yes, it was the death of Patrick, played by Matthew Lenevez, who was partner to the show's protagonist, Nina, played by Asha Keddy. And here's the moment where, pregnant with his unborn child, she learns of his death at hospital.
And it was very messy in there, and we worked to ease the pressure and to locate the source of the bleed and to suture the blood vessels.
How is he? Can we go and see him?
We weren't successful.
What?
We did everything we could, but he didn't survive the procedure. I'm so sorry.
Some great writing there.
Look, this is such a great show because Offspring actually knows what it wants to be. It's got a very clear direction of who its audience is. It's made for women. And, you know, if you happen to live in a household and you're a guy and you're smart and you watch the show, you'll probably like the show as well. But this is a show that's very clearly being made for a particular audience, great cast. And, you know, let's face it, it's the best show on Channel 10 at the moment, with maybe Puberty Blues coming a close second, but we didn't get a second series in 2013. But, you know, this is one of the only shows on Channel 10 that's getting any cut-through whatsoever. And in terms of killing off Patrick, people got upset about it, but hey, it's good drama, and that show would be boring with them, you know, happily living ever after with a baby. You know, they've now created all this drama. She's a single mother with a newborn baby, and this was a show always about, you know, Nina finding love, and now she's got to look for love under those circumstances. It was absolutely the right thing to kill him off.
I do remember that the Fairfax Press actually gave an editorial to the death of Patrick when this happened. But it's also one of the shows that's really utilised social media very well, very cleverly, with people tweeting and Facebooking through the show, kind of almost commenting on the script. What do you make of it, Byron Bache?
I think it's the smartest written show on Australian television. I think that they, I mean, like Andrew's saying, they know where to get their stories from. And they crib from a lot of American television. They crib from Grey's Anatomy, from Ally McBeal even. It's this show that is essentially a hodgepodge of all of these different kind of tropes and elements, but they make it work so well. And I think it's down to an incredibly smart writer's room, but also down to Asha Keddy, who is just, she's a dream to watch on television. And she's such a kind of fine, I mean, no wonder she's nominated for 6,000 Logie Awards every year.
Mm. And don't forget Kat Stewart playing her sister too. So you have that light and shade there. You know, the character of Billy is also so strong and integral to that show, you know. So it's just a fantastic show.
On RN, this is The List. We're looking back at the year in television. With us is TV historian Andrew Mercado and TV critic for Crikey, Byron Bache. Now, just one of the things that was quite notable, I think, for this year was the rise of the panel show, the Rough and Ready, and particularly the live panel show. Here's a moment from one that you particularly like, Jason DeRosso.
Yeah, this is Santo Samanid's Total Football. It's a weekly satirical three guys on a panel show on Foxtel talking about everything round ball football related, soccer related. It's very live and I just think very funny. Here's the beginning of the episode, which came straight after Australia was beaten something like 6 or 7 nil by France, and the coach Holger Osik was sacked soon after.
It was a downer last week, wasn't it?
It was a real downer.
For
it was
sure. They've just gone down 6-0.
Yeah. They went to, well, did you see the rankings?
FIFA World Rankings?
FIFA World Rankings. We're at number 57. Okay. So I had to look on the second page. Yeah. 57. Which coincidentally was the same amount of shots that the French had on target. Oh, but have you seen the other teams on the
actually,
on the
57
list?
Is the amount of minutes after the game that Holger was sacked.
They just know how to do a live panel, and it's funny, loose, they know the game, and they also, I don't know, they just bring such an irreverence to it.
Yeah, look, there's some great chemistry there.
I'm not a huge soccer fan, but I'm a huge fan of those guys, and I would actually watch that show for those guys. Ed Cavalli loves this TV. Santo, you know, we knew from the D Generation and those shows all those years ago, and Sam Pang, who co-hosts Eurovision on TV. They also are appearing on that new, quietly slipped into the schedule panel show on Channel 10, Have You Been Paying Attention, Sunday nights at 7 p.m. That's actually a really funny show too.
Which is also made by Working
Correct.
Dog. Yeah,
but highly formatted. And there are a number, obviously, the big one, of course, is The Project, which isn't new, but has sort of gone on from success to success this year. A couple of other ones have popped up. There's that Midweek Live one. On
This Week Live.
This Week Live.
Byron, what do you think? Is this emerging as the kind of way Aussies talk to each other now?
I think it's a really appealing way to spend, you know, half an hour or an hour of television. And that's why the panel was such a raging success in all of its kind of various incarnations over, I think, the 7 or 8 years that it lasted. My favourite of this year was This Week Live. I think it kind of had that spirit that the panel had about it. And Michelle Laurie, who was on the panel, is she such a star? There's an alternate history of Australian television where Michelle Laurie got a Tonight Show instead of Rove, and I think it's a better one.
I agree with you. I think This Week Live had amazing chemistry, and I would also say that Tom Gleeson has finally shown to TV audience that he's an extremely funny, cynical guy, and for Tom Gleeson and Michelle Laurie being on that show, I would watch This Week Live every week if they were on it.
Yeah, he introduced that segment, which was I Hate You, Change My Mind.
Fantastic.
Yeah. There's so many things that we didn't touch on. We didn't talk about Mr. and Mrs. Murder or Underbelly Squizzy, which was a bit of a dog, according to you, Andrew. Reef Doctors, many, many others that have fallen by the wayside. We didn't even touch The Bachelor, thank goodness.
Thank goodness.
But unfortunately, I think we're going to have next year to do that.
All All right, now to talk about our obsessions. What have we been obsessed with this week in popular culture? What can we not get out of our heads? First to you, Andrew Mercado.
My favourite obsession is an app for your mobile phone called Run-P, P-double-E. And what it does is it tells you the moment in a movie that you could go to the bathroom and not miss anything. So given that most Hollywood movies now go for 2.5 hours, you can read it before you go in and watch the movie, and it will say to you, at 1 hour, 17 minutes, when Jennifer Lawrence grabs a bottle of vodka, you've got 5 minutes.
People are going to need it for the new Scorsese, which... you know, hits upwards of about 3 hours. So, yeah, that's pretty useful. Not that I'd ever use it as a film critic.
Total professional.
Byron Beige.
I spent a couple of hours in airports and on planes this week, and I reread Alison Bechdel, the graphic novelist's memoir, Fun Home. Fun Home, short for Funeral Home, which is about her father and her mother and the funeral home that she grew up in. And if you've never read a graphic novel, this is a perfect kind of entry point. She's wry and funny, and it's just kind of the most delicious, heartbreaking read.
All right, and to you, Cassie McCullough.
I'm gonna nominate some books, actually, and I'm looking at the series My Struggle by Karl-Ove Knausgård, the Norwegian writer who basically unloaded his entire family history in a 6-volume autobiography. Fantastic, fantastic. And there's a third book is being translated into English next year, so catch up now.
All right. Meanwhile, I've been obsessing with... I want you all to help me out here because I don't really know what the point of this is, but it's a whole series of videos that appear on YouTube, different people posting them, that are... You know the videos people post unwrapping their latest technology purchases?
Have you come across this phenomenon?
They will unpack a new DSLR camera or something they bought, or an Xbox.
When the new phone of any brand comes out, there's suddenly online all these videos of people unwrapping them.
So it's the joy of unwrapping.
The
and this side of Christmas, I thought this obsession was kind of poignant. but there are all these videos. There's a subgenre of these videos that are all about unwrapping surprise eggs, which might be chocolate eggs or just normal plastic eggs with cheap toys inside.
Like a Kinder Surprise or a Yowie or something like that.
Here's a taste.
Hey guys and girls, thanks for tuning in. Today we're checking out 12 really amazing surprise eggs. First up, here we have a Peppa Pig surprise egg. Let's take a look inside and see what we find.
So right, there you go. All these videos are just a pair of hands, two hands and an egg. And unwrapping it, maybe a bit of editing, and then you see what's inside, and it's just serious. But they're everywhere. And
I'd watch that before I'd watch a phone unboxing. It sounds marvellous.
They're really hypnotic. It's enthralling in a very strange, weird way. But
I can't say I'm overly excited about that, but I would watch that before 2.5 Men.
All right. Well, that's maybe the future of the small screen next year. This is going to be the big thing next year, watching people unwrap surprise eggs.
Channel
10 is the channel that did an hour of YouTube clips on Friday nights with Friday Night Download. So.
Oh, dear.
I reckon we're onto something here. This will be the trend.
Well, I'm the one who has to say it. That's a wrap for the list this week. Thank you so much for being our guests, Andrew and Byron.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Andrew Mercado is an Australian television historian of note. He's a co-host also of Foxtel's movie show and the author of Super Aussie Soaps. Byron Beige is a TV critic for Crikey and a theatre critic for The Herald Sun.
Next week, we're going to be talking about the biggest moments in pop culture of 2013.
Yeah, and we're interested to know what ones you want to nominate. Head to our program page and leave us a comment and tell us what you think was one of the cut-through moments of 2013.
Yes, just go to the RN homepage and follow the links to The List. I'm Jason DeRosso.
And I'm Cassie McCullough. See you next week.